Back in November, just before Thanksgiving, Stephen Brubaker and his philosophy students from the Faith Builders Mennonite community out in Guy's Mills were here, and I talked a little bit about my Catholic background. I focused then mainly on what I had loved about it. I did talk about how I was taught that if I missed Mass on Sunday or committed some other mortal sin, I'd go straight to hell. If I died with that sin on my soul, I wouldn't even get a crack at heaven through purgatory. But we Catholics had confession, and confession was such a healing ritual. My dad would drive me to the church, and I'd go in and sit in one of the pews and sort of daydreaming among the flickering offertory candles, waiting my turn to get up and go to the confessional door that had been left open by the sinner before me, and go in and quietly shut the door behind me. It was important to know who was already there when I arrived, so I would know when it was my turn. When the priest slid open the little door on his side of the little velvet curtain between us, I said, "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned." I mean, we're talking about a 10-year-old child here. And then I had to tell him all my petty sins that I'd committed since the last time I went to confession, sins like sassing my mother or stealing the change that I found deep in the crevices of the upholstery so I could go down to the corner store and buy candy with it. And of course, the most damnable sin of all, missing Mass. It was important to be full of contrition, the nuns told us, because otherwise we wouldn't be get absolution, and we'd go to hell anyway. Then, when I was finished confessing, the priests would issue my penance, maybe, you know, say five Our Fathers and five Hail Marys, or if my sins had been particularly egregious, I might get a whole rosary to say. Then I'd go straight to another part of the church, say my penance, and then I left feeling safe and no longer fearful of dying in an automobile accident with a sin on my soul. This was not terrifying or onerous to me at all. In fact, it felt good to know that I was back in favor with God. There were other things I loved about being a Catholic, too. I especially remember Sister Liguori, who was so impressive because her carriage was tall and swift and smooth when she strode down an aisle or a hallway with her veil gently fluttering behind her. And her singing voice was clear and ringing, and in all she seemed the very essence of holiness to me. I also liked saying the Latin liturgy in unison with the rest of the congregation, from the little missals with the tissue paper thin pages and the colorful satin ribbons that we used to mark our place. The responses were mysterious and wonderful to me. Kyrie eleison, Christi eleison, Dominus vobiscum. I didn't really know what they meant. I think I have some idea now. Then a few years later, when the Catholic Church did away with all the pageantry and anglicized the Mass, these phrases lost all their mystery, and going to a Catholic church became kind of disappointingly similar to a Protestant one. When the Faith Builders were here, though, I didn't say much about what I didn't love about being a Catholic, and that was because the emphasis during that service was on common values that this UU congregation likely shared with the Mennonite congregation who was here visiting with us. I merely said that as I emerged from my youth, I quit practicing Catholicism because while I loved the Catholic ritual and pageantry and all the mysterious phrases, the beliefs just didn't mesh well with my highest values. So today I want to tell you something about those Catholic beliefs, the Catholic dogma, that I've pretty much rejected. When I began preparing this homily, I wanted to make sure my memory about the dogma wasn't faulty, so I consulted a website called Catholic Answers. And what I discovered is the tenets of Catholicism are even more dogmatic than I thought they were. First of all, it's important for you to know that Catholics believe their dogma is both divinely revealed and infallible. So there are six things that Catholics must believe in order to call themselves Catholic and not be guilty of heresy. And admittedly, I've compressed about a year's worth of theology class into about 20 sentences because I didn't think you'd want me to do it any longer than that. Okay. The first thing is the Trinity. Catholics must believe that God is three distinct persons, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, all mystically combined into one divine entity. This is the main theological point of departure between Christians and the early Unitarians. William Ellery Channing, who is generally regarded as the father of American Unitarianism, was labeled an anti-Trinitarian heretic because of that. The second one is transubstantiation. Catholics must believe that during the sacrament of Eucharist, what most of us call communion, the consecrated bread is transformed into the actual, real presence of the body of Christ. The third tenet, purgatory. This is the place where Catholics go when they die with a minor, or what we call venial, sin on their soul. It's sort of like a halfway house on their way to heaven. The fourth one is the Immaculate Conception. Original sin is a Christian doctrine that states that all humans are born with a sinful nature. And this is because of Adam and Eve's disobedient act of eating the forbidden fruit in the Garden of Eden. According to Catholic dogma, Mary, the mother of Jesus, is venerated as the only mortal soul who was conceived and born without the stain of original sin on her soul. That's why Catholics say the Hail Mary, full of grace. I guess I'm kind of glad to see there's at least one honored female in a whole sea of male holiness, though. The fifth one is the Assumption of Mary into heaven. Catholics must believe that upon her death, Mary was assumed by God into heaven, not just her soul, but her actual body as well. Then there's this sixth bit of Catholic dogma called indulgences. Here's what the Catholic Answers website says an indulgence is. Now bear with me because this is a long and sort of abstruse sentence, that this is what they say it is. An indulgence is the extra sacramental remission of the temporal punishment due in God's justice to sin that has been forgiven, which remission is granted by the church in the exercise of the power of the keys through the application of the superabundant merits of Christ and of the saints, and for some just and reasonable motive. Huh? I have no idea what that sentence means. How would a Catholic know whether they believed it or didn't? So I turned to Microsoft's artificial intelligence to see if it could help me figure out what an indulgence actually was. An indulgence is apparently some favorable treatment that you can get either for yourself or for a loved one that you figure might have wound up in purgatory instead of getting all the way into heaven. You get them by saying prayers, fasting, almsgiving, going on pilgrimages, taking communion, going to confession and performing other good works. So, those are the beliefs that Catholics must accept. Like me in my youth, I suspect many Catholics don't even know that they're supposed to believe all of those things in order to consider themselves Catholic. And while these beliefs seem a little bit absurd to me, my main objection is that they seem irrelevant to make what makes one a good person. And then I had an experience in my personal life that really brought home the Catholic Church's rigid dogma and convoluted rules that I was about to bump up against. When Rich and I decided to get married several decades ago, I wanted to be married in the Catholic Church, but I thought that might not be possible because I was marrying a divorced man. We were both graduate students at Kent State University at the time, so we went to visit the priest who was the Catholic chaplain there. Rich's divorce status would pose no problem, he reassured us when he'd heard the history. It went like this. Rich's first wife was a Catholic. She had already been married and divorced. Therefore, in the eyes of the church, she and Rich were never married. Therefore, since he had never really been married, he was not really divorced. Therefore, he and I could get married in the Catholic Church. While we didn't hesitate to jump through that loophole, this experience probably had more to do with why I fell away than any other single event. So how did I land here? I had no religious affiliation for a couple of decades at all, and then our two children joined the youth group here at the invitation of their friends, Amanda and Greg Bailey. We were already friends with the Bailey parents, Pat, Bob, and Pat, so I think that between them and the kids, we must have been induced to try out this place. We didn't know much about it, but we liked the openness and the encouragement to search for meaning in life. And so we stayed a long time, almost 40 years. Why? Well, a few years ago when Carmen Emerson was our minister, she encouraged us to prepare a document called Five Wishes. Probably some of others of you in here have done that. It's a document that legally takes the place of a durable power of attorney or a living will, but it also includes sections for spelling out one's personal and emotional end-of-life wishes. Partly because of the Alzheimer's disease in my family, I really wanted to specify circumstances under which I would want someone to provide me with aid in dying. But that's not legal under any circumstances in the state of Pennsylvania, even though there's been a proposed law on the boards for a couple of decades to permit it. And that's because other religious groups have opposed it. So I'm a little bit angry that other people's religious beliefs are being imposed on me. And in the end, I did include the desire for aid in dying in my five wishes. But that's about as close to being an activist as I'll ever come, and Carmen really wanted us to be activists. Anyway, my favorite UU principles are the ones I see as having the most impact because they're the most individually achievable. That is, I don't have to march on the Capitol or join a political action committee or write letters to the editor in order to have an impact. These are all things that I can do a little at a time in my own way, day by day. And I need to issue a little caveat here because I'm still using the old wording of the principles, not the new wording that Rick talked about last Sunday. I sort of lumped the first two UU principles together into one. the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. So, we accept one another here. Happy people and troubled people. Wealthy people and people who are just getting by. Carnivores and vegans. Gay people and straight people. People from Christian, Jewish, atheist, pagan, and Buddhist traditions. Athletic people and couch potatoes. Extroverts and introverts. And I love that. It's part of why I always go to coffee hour, because I get to practice that there. My other favorite UU principle is our promotion of free and responsible search for truth and meaning. No one here tells me I have to maintain beliefs that I find unimportant, uninspiring, vaguely preposterous, or irrelevant when it comes to being a good person. Do I believe in God? I'm not sure. If God is the personification of a force for good in the world, maybe I do, although I don't think he's doing such a hot job right now. But I certainly don't believe in a personal God who is watching over me, evaluating my behavior, getting me out of scrapes I've gotten myself into, or deciding whether I go to heaven or hell. Do I believe in heaven and hell? I don't think so. If there is a hell, I think it might be something like how most Christians describe heaven. Perfect peace and tranquility forever and ever. No, thank you. I cannot imagine enduring something that boring for that long. My personal search for truth and meaning has kept me here. And while it would probably seem a bit simple-minded to a theologian, and maybe even to some of you, I like the precept of the golden rule: do unto others as you would have them do unto you. To me, that means it matters whether I treat people in my life fairly and kindly. It matters whether I did all I was capable of doing to give my children a good start in life. It matters whether I give my husband the kind of companionship and intimacy that brings him peace and satisfaction. It matters whether I work hard to do my best at whatever role I undertake. It matters what I say and how I say it. It matters how I earned my living and what I do with my money. It matters whether I have been a good steward of the resources at my disposal. I'm at a point in my life where I think quite a lot about how I did at these things. And I have to say, I am so grateful to be in this place with you, among people who accept one another and are each on your own mission to make your life meaningful. May it be so.